Our good friend Ariel Kahana is with Israel Hayom, political military correspondent, knows what's happening. He's got his finger on the pulse of the Jewish world, especially in Israel. Spent some time here in the United States, and he'll explain to us why. Coming up here at JM in the AM. Ariel Kahana, shalom, shalom. Welcome back to JM in the AM.
Shalom, Nachum. Good morning to you, to all the listeners. How are you?
Baruch Hashem. How long were you here before the election, and how long were you here after the election?
Well, I would say it was, 8 days, 8 fascinating days, a week before the elections, and then 2 days after, including elected president, President-elect Trump in West Palm, Miami Beach party. But even more exciting for me was really to feel the pulse in few states, including in Asheville in North Carolina, including Erie County in Pennsylvania, Cleveland. I mean, you have a very interesting country, I must say, a little bit larger than ours.
You're suggesting that you were already able to feel that he would win in those states, or you're saying just in general it was interesting to watch the procedure days before the election in those states?
Well, to be honest, I think 2 days before, 3 days before, let's say from the beginning of last week, many friends were asking me, well, what do I think? And I said that I'm optimistic, cautious optimism. That's what I wrote. Yes, I felt he's going to make it. I didn't imagine how strong and unbelievable it's going to be. I think no one expected that, but including the popular vote and all the rest. I mean, you know much better than me.
What do you think the real percentage of happy people in Israel was? Because we hear, ridiculous numbers, 85-90% of Israelis, wanted Trump to win. But obviously there's a strong, unfortunately, or whatever, there's a strong anti-BB camp. I can't imagine that they preferred that he win. What do you think the real numbers are in Israel?
Well, I don't know if it's 85 or 90, maybe 70, but there's no question that vast majority of Israelis are very happy with Trump victory. Especially, I mean, I don't want to go, to American politics. Bipartisanship is very important from Israeli aspect, but right. But let's say that the common wisdom here was that if Kamala Harris would win, then she and her staff around her would be much, much less sympathized with Israel, right? Yeah. So, and that's to be very careful with my words. Yeah. I mean, if she, the people here were quite afraid that if she will win, we will definitely face a military embargo, limiting the protection in the United Nations Security Council. I mean, in other words, a lot of fights.
And unrealistic expectations about the humanitarian aid and other things, no question about it. All right, so that's interesting about the Israel piece. Now, what is it? I get it. Once you're there and you see the celebration, you spend a day or two, absorbing what had happened. I get that role, but in advance, what were you asked to do? Your bosses are asking you to do what? Are you being asked to speak to people? Are you being asked to follow the campaigns? What was it like the few days before the election?
Yeah. I was going from one place to another. I participated in with Kamala Harris event in rally, and I even enjoyed a pro Palestinian or pro Hamas guy shouting near me in rally, in a rally in the city of rally. I mean, in North Carolina.
We distinguish by calling a rally at the city Raleigh. That's how we distinguish.
Raleigh, got you. Okay. So it was rally in Raleigh. my job is to see what's going on and write it back to the readers here in Israel and talk about it in radio shows and TV shows and so on. And, I'm used to cover Israeli elections. It was very nice to see American elections.
There's some who claim that lame duck presidents, second and or last term, are bad for Israel because you never know what they may do, especially if they don't feel they need a future Jewish / Zionist / Israeli support. And of course, there's a million theories, both historically and in present times, to suggest that that might be the case. Someone told me, a reader of yours, that you've hopped on that bandwagon, that you're a little wary of what a Trump administration the second time around may mean for Israel.
Oh, so you're asking about Trump or you're asking about Biden?
No, Trump.
Because first we have to face with Biden in the last weeks,
right?
And maybe more with his staff, with his advisors, and so on.
But address your Trump point.
Yeah, but okay, but no. Look, I mean, when we made the interview, I mean, my chief editor, Omer Lachmanovich, and myself, and I think that you and I, Nachum, we talked about it later. So Trump, and you could see it all along the elections, he was not 100% positive and supportive with Israel all along the way. I mean, it's not what we felt and had during his first term. Now, after the elections, it's quite clear that he didn't want to go. That's my explanation. He didn't want to go, 100% to our side.
Well, there's also a war going on there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but he wanted, he didn't want to lose the Michigan voters, the Arab voters, the Muslim right. vote, and so on. And it was smart from his point of view, and I get that. But comparing to Kamala Harris, to me, it's clear he's going to be much, much better. And I do think he has a lot of positive, very positive people around him, and including himself. I do think he loves Israel. Maybe he was disappointed with how we handled the war. He was disappointed that we didn't win. At least that was the condition about half a year ago. That's where we were. But his guts are positive. Let's put it this way, okay? Yeah. He's not. There is no but. He wants us to win. He wants us to do it quickly.
I'm not questioning that. I'm not questioning that at all. It's just interesting to discuss the concept of someone being a lame duck president and how different they might behave in the White House. Ariel Kahana is with us, Yisrael Hayom. All right. At this point, we've had plenty of election analysis and certainly welcome your point of view, but the listeners want to hear what you and what Israeli journalists, what observers, what members of government think of what happened in Amsterdam last week. Tell me from your point of view, what you know about this terrible episode.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would say people here are shocked because you have on weekly basis hundreds of sport fans while flying to Europe to see the games, whether it's basketball or football.
That's normal. That always happens. That's normal.
Exactly. And now the question is, would that have to be changed? Because you had yesterday that those guys in the security establishment, they told those fans not to go to actually two games in Europe. I think one in Italy and one in France, and to be very, very careful. So the question is this going to be changed? And now, of course, if it will, it means that Israelis and Jews cannot go freely to Europe. Which, it's an unbelievable statement to say. I mean, can't we go with a kippah or with a Magen David in the streets of Paris or Amsterdam or Rome? I mean, does it make sense to anyone? But those are actually the new instructions here. And that makes people very, very worried. And of course, to see, I mean, I don't have to tell you, Nahum, but, to see Jews attacked in Amsterdam, by dozens of them, by hundreds of Muslims, it's a pogrom. It was a pogrom in Holland. It's unbelievable. I must share with you. I was on my flight back to Israel when that happened, and I was connected with WhatsApp, with the internet, and then friends wrote me, "Can you help?" They wanted me. I mean, I was somewhere in the air, and they asked my help. Yeah, but it tells you how people were afraid. And someone, he writes me, I reached the hotel. Someone was with his boy. Another one was with his friend. And he says, I'm trying to call the embassy. No one is answering. Let them know what my address is and so on. People were very, 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 very afraid. And, of course, many injured and so on. So it was, of course, a shocking event. No question.
I mean, it's a miracle nobody was killed, frankly. And what do they say in Israel? Because it was interesting, the Israeli reaction, in addition to the condemnation, in addition to, you know, sending the foreign minister, in addition to making phone calls to the government officials they felt might be able to help in Amsterdam, they actually sent planes to evacuate people, which is, you know, that's quite a move. That's quite a statement, frankly. What was the Israeli reaction to the way the police and the government handled things in Amsterdam?
Well, it's a huge disappointment. It's a huge disappointment because, again, you wanna go safe. I mean, for us, as you know, it's trips, it's tours, again, one of our friends went with his son. I mean, you want to feel safe when you go to a trip, don't you?
Yeah, of course.
And if you are in with your, I don't know, 9 years old boy, going somewhere in Amsterdam, then you have to run away to your hotel, and you have to get escorted by the police. So again, it's really unbelievable. So again, people are shocked. People are really, really shocked, and of course, disappointment with the police over there. And there is a question who exactly failed and why. And by the way, now it seems that the press over there, and maybe the establishment in Holland, they actually deny what happened. They're trying to say it was not that awful, and that the Israelis didn't have to shout what they shouted against Arabs, and shouldn't take down the PLO flags and so on. I mean, some kind of excuses. But bottom line, Jews were attacked physically in Amsterdam by hundreds of Muslims, gangs, whatever. Really, it's an unbelievable event.
It is unbelievable. And I can't find it right now, but I thought I saw something happen in Stockholm as well in the last day or two. And yeah, you wonder, you know, and by the way, if you don't think it extends here, as I said to plenty of people over the weekend, this is not, we're not that far away here in the United States from the same type of thing happening. I'm not saying that the police forces will react the way they did in Amsterdam. They're known to be a lot more conscientious and a lot more supportive when it comes to things like this. But, you know, to a degree, I'm sure you know, you're following the news here to a degree.
Yeah. I saw what happened.
To a degree.
It was also a father and the boy in Crown Heights,
in
right?
Crown Heights. And to a degree, the police are handcuffed, you know, as ironic as that statement sounds. But, you know, to a degree they are because of the atmosphere now toward the mm-hmm. police by many. So it's a scary situation. If you don't think it could happen here on a college campus or somewhere where Jews gather for any purpose, I think we're fooling ourselves. Now, give me one other piece that we haven't discussed, and that is the current Israeli government, and not as it relates to Europe and not as it relates to Trump, but just in general. You know, we wonder, and you and I have discussed over the last few months how long Bibi can last and how strong or weak his government is. What would you say in November of 2024 if you were asked to analyze the current state of the Israeli government?
So politically, Nahum, I think the government is even more stable.
Wow.
Because you know that now Gideon Saar joined the government, he just became a foreign minister, I think with another four fingers in the Knesset. That means the coalition now has, if I'm not wrong, it's 67, maybe 68, depends how you count Gallant.
Right.
So actually, it looks very stable. The one and only issue which might push the government to fall is the question of the Haredim going to the army, of the Gius Haredim. That's a very painful, very sensitive issue. I don't see how is it solved, because I don't see the Haredi leadership agree to send at least those guys, those boys who are not learning, or just, you know, it is written that they're learning in the yeshivat, but tachlis, they are not doing it. So as long as they don't send at least those guys, those boys to Tzahal, it's very, very problematic. And I can tell you that even in my sector, in the Mizrahi sector, the Kippot Sogot, a lot of people are beginning to say, if this government, this right-wing government, cannot solve this issue and cannot bring any change, so you know what? Okay, so maybe we should go to elections and another coalition will face this problem because you know, we paid, I mean the society here paid a very, very high price of so many casualties, and there is just one sector who is not part of the war, that his boys are completely safe, that they don't help, and really people can't bear it anymore. So I think that's it's not a current political threat to the government, but at some point it might become such. And because again, even with Smotrich party, a lot of people are saying, okay, enough is enough, and if you can change it, so I don't know, go ask for the public trust once again.
I heard something very frightening, and this is not my quote, folks. This is not my quote. I heard something very frightening the other day, and I'm not even saying, Ariel Kahana, this is accurate. Just the fact that it's being said gives one pause. Someone said last week to me that the resentment that the Dati Lumi, religious Zionist community, has now for the Haredim because of the army issue is equal, if not more, to the resentment that the secular community has to the Haredim. Now, I'm not saying it's accurate, but just the fact that someone's thinking that way is pretty scary.
Well, I don't know if we have to compare it to the Chiloni sector, but I can tell you that the anger is very, very, very high. Very high. Because especially this sector, again, the Dati Leumi, I guess you know very well that at least in the last, all along the war, but definitely in the last weeks, almost all of the killed soldiers came from this sector. So they say, it's the same Torah, it's the same Halacha, it's the same Jewish state, it's the same army, why don't you come?
And the mistake is, frankly, that if the leadership in the Haredi community would simply express a desire to try to compromise a bit or solve this in some small way, as you described, that would go such a long way. But unfortunately,
they can make the change. It's not that hard. By the way, there is no threat of the Haredim becoming Chiloni in the Tzava, in the army. It's nonsense. I mean, I have two boys. I mean, one already finished, another one is now serving. And the 100% Dati, there is no problem with that. I think today, maybe half of the soldiers today are Dati and Masorti, if not more. So there is no, I mean, if you want to stay Dati in Tzal, there is no problem with that. But, you know, it takes courage to make the change. And at least now I don't see it coming.
And yes, everybody, I do feel that I and anybody else outside of Israel does have the same obligation to send children to the army. The difference is we acknowledge that, even though we're just as lackadaisical in actually doing it very often. Not everybody, obviously, but at least we acknowledge that, and an acknowledgement would certainly go a long way. Ariel Kahana, todah rabah. So it's been an exciting couple of weeks. You've been very busy on this on these recent news cycles, to say the least, huh?
Correct. So news is always busy.
Yeah.
It still didn't happen that my paper came one morning with a white sheet and said, okay, we had no news yesterday to tell you. So,
I hear that. Todah rabah, my friend. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Bye-bye.
Ariel Kahana with Israel Hayom here at JM in the AM. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at AchumSiegel.com and the AchumSiegel Network, and of course, the beloved NSN app.